Back together again, you and I chatting it up on a Tuesday edition of Connecticut Today, November 11th, 2025. I opened the show looking at a demand issued from the Connecticut ACLU that local license plate scanners be turned off until legal safeguards are put in place regarding the use of any data collected by those units. Alexis Harrison joined us from CT 169 Strong to chat about the latest affordable housing bill from the General Assembly. Yankee Institute blogger Megan Portfolio briefed us on the state of Connecticut's bid to possibly buy some failing hospitals. And finally, CBS News reporter Torian Small joined us from Washington, D.C. live to talk about progress in Congress to end the government shutdown.
So when you're out and about, when you're walking, when you're driving your vehicle, when you're a passenger in a vehicle, are you worried about people watching you? Are you worried about, you know, what is being now called, I guess, by many a surveillance state? Are you worried about that? Are you worried about being surveilled, that, you know, you have no real privacy when you're outside, which you don't? And courts have, said that for a while now, that the idea of having any amount of, you know, definite privacy when you leave your home or leave your place of business, wherever you live or work on a given day, is just not there. Now, you and I have gone round and round about this in a good-natured way. You know, once I'm out of the condo that I live in, the high-rise, and I'm outside where anybody can look at me, where at any given time there's probably two or three satellites looking down at me, I don't care. Because if people want to surveil me, they are going to find out quickly, really, really quickly, how boring my life is. I'm not cheating on anybody. I'm not going places where I shouldn't go. I'm not doing anything I think that I shouldn't do. A big night out for me is the 10 chicken nuggets instead of the 4 or the 6. You know, that's me. I'm the boring, white, suburban, pudgy guy sitting there wondering what life is all about at my age. But there are some people who don't like this, and now the Connecticut chapter of the American Civil Liberties Unit, the American Civil Liberties Union, whose core mission I definitely agree with. I mean, part of the wonder and joy of living in this country is to enjoy the probably still, even though people are bitching and moaning about it, probably the freest society on the planet. I mean, when you look at some of the speech laws, the creeping dirt of speech laws now in the UK and in Canada, it's frightening. So, you know, I know the TDS crowd is out there saying, you know, we're living amongst fascism, we can't say this or that, please stop it. You're embarrassing yourself. But having said that, I do generally support the core meeting and the core meaning, I should say, of the American Civil Liberties Union, the ACLU. But how about this? I want to start with this because this is a fascinating topic. Who's allowed to watch you? Who's allowed to watch you and I? And to what extent does our privacy reach? Fascinating story here in the Hearst Papers, Bill Cummings' story. Get this. The ACLU of Connecticut, the American Civil Liberties Union of Connecticut, and I guess that may be the same as the CCLU. I don't know whether the CCLU even exists anymore. They are demanding. They're not asking now. When I was growing up, you would ask. You'd be somewhat courteous. You'd say, hey, pardon me, sir. Pardon me, ma'am. May I? Is it possible? Yada, yada, yada. But the American Civil Liberties Union in Connecticut is demanding that the state halt license plate reader use over privacy concerns. They want officials all around Connecticut to turn off automatic license plate reader cameras, which several municipalities have. It's known a few of those, I guess, and where they might be, but Largely, they're scattered across the state until laws are passed to prevent misuse of personal data collected by the overhead surveillance. David McGuire, who leads the ACLU of Connecticut, says every person in the state should be able to drive to work, school, or the doctor without ending up in a government database. Well, David, that's kind of nice, but that's not the point of the license plate readers. The point is to find criminals. The point of the license plate readers is to find people who would do you or I or somebody else harm. Says here, they've been popping up in numerous cities and towns across the state. They're managed by local police departments. Many police officials have said, yes, they have solved crimes and cases of missing people by tracking every license plate that drives past. But others have argued the scanners are an invasion of privacy and the info could end up in the wrong hands. Could. Doesn't say it does. Doesn't say it does. Says, well, it could end up in the wrong hands. It could. Well, I could ask to be the starting pitcher on opening day for the Yankees next year. I doubt that's going to happen. Now, I don't recall a story here, there, or anywhere saying, hey, somebody got into this database and whatever. The ACLU said a moratorium is needed until new laws prevent, now here we go, the misuse, sharing, and selling of driver location data. All right, but do we know that's happening? Is that going to happen? Noting information can now be used against immigrants, LGBTQ people, and anybody seeking reproductive or gender-affirming care, which in many instances is butchery, but I won't go there. When our state's location data is being accessed by ICE, he says here, and states that criminalize abortion or gender-affirming care, that surveillance becomes a direct threat to people's safety and freedom. Well, okay, I understand the argument here. But is there any evidence this is happening? This kind of unchecked monitoring has a chilling effect on people exercising their rights, whether visiting a health clinic, attending a protest, or going to worship. Well, where's the... Well, you see, this is my point here. Where's the proof this is being done? Oh, yeah, you know what? They could do this. Well, okay. I would be 100% in favor of turning off these license plate readers if we know the information is being abused. Do we have any proof of that? Or is this just another push to hamstring lawmakers because somebody who, you know, they might be an illegal immigrant. Somebody who might be an illegal may get snagged by one of these license plate readers. Too bad. Should have thought about that before you came here illegally. So what are your thoughts on this? 203-333-9422-333-WICC. Now, if you want to pass laws that say, hey, we have to guard the data and the photos from these license plate readers, okay, I'm good with that. But you don't turn them off. See, that's the part that bothers me. You don't turn them off. You don't turn off these license plate readers and say, well, we're going to keep them off until we, until we pass legislation in Hartford. That's good. You know how long that'll take. That'll never happen. That will never happen. Because the minute you get the CCLU and the ACLU strong-arming some legislators in Hartford saying, hey, you know, you got to get these license plate readers off. Why? Well, you know, illegals. Really? Why? Migrants? Really? And meantime, police are swearing by these things. Now, they're a little guarded as to where these license plate readers are. You don't want to tell the bad guys here. But what if some illegals, Paul, get collared by these things? Too bad. Life sucks, doesn't it? So what do you think? Should municipalities suspend the use of remote license plate readers until more safeguards regarding data use are in place? And does this bother you? Honestly, doesn't bother me in the least bit. You can go right ahead and take a photo of my license plate anytime, anywhere, and you'll find how boring of a life I lead. What if there are undocumented migrants in the car, Paul, and they get snagged? Well, hey, you know, too bad. Life sucks. So these automatic license plate readers, they're out there. Now, these are different than the speed cameras and the red light cameras that are being put up in various cities and towns. And trust me, you're going to see those things, the speed cameras and the red light cameras, in every city and town within 5 or 10 years. But the ACLU of Connecticut, the Connecticut chapter of the American Civil Liberties Union, wants the state to order local police departments, cities and towns, to turn off the license plate readers. Turn them off. Even though the readers are being credited here with finding stolen cars. I've talked to police on this show. They help them find stolen cars. They help them keep track of suspects and whatever. And the ACLU wants these things turned off because of the chance. And again, there's a difference between something, there's a chance of something and actual evidence that the data that is collected and, I guess, stored by some third-party companies here, including a company called Flock. There's a chance that data may be misused. Now, the ACLU, the CCLU, or the Connecticut Civil Liberties Union, the ACLU chapter, is saying, well, it could be used against, what a surprise, migrants. It could be used against people seeking gender-affirming care, all right? None of my business if they're doing that. And I know there's an interstate or intrastate thing about gender-affirming care, but again, coulda, woulda, shoulda is not an excuse to turn these license plate readers off. I don't care. People can read my license plate and watch me all they want. They will fall asleep. They'll be so bored. Honestly. But do you have any worry about these license plate readers? I don't. Now, again, there are certain cities and towns that use them, certain don't. They don't say exactly where they are. People generally in the cities and towns know where they are, but a lot of times the dummies, the crooks out there, the ne'er-do-wells don't. And that's where it comes in handy to try and track these people. But the Connecticut Civil Liberties Union, the ACLU, says they want them turned off on the chance that there may be some abuse here. I don't get that. Does that make any sense at all? And do you care? Does it bother you? Because it doesn't bother me, but again, you're not me and I'm not you. And that's what makes the world go round. Does it ever cross your mind that, hey, somebody may be reading my license plate? And if it does it bother you? Honestly, I couldn't care less if you paid me. What about if it's abuse, Paul? Well, what's abuse? How do you abuse that? Oh, well, you know, if you're looking for illegals, oh, that's abuse. If you're trying to root out, you know, people doing things they shouldn't be doing, is that abuse? Profiling, is that abuse? Some people say profiling is good police work. So that's our question of the day. We lead off with this at 203-333-9422-333-WICC or online. Facebook.com/voiceofct. Should municipalities suspend the use of remote license plate readers until more safeguards are put in place regarding the data? Or if you're like me, do you just not care? Take every photo of my license plate you want to, and if that gives you the jollies, we're good. Traffic and weather together right here, WICC.
If you remember from the first go-around with the housing bill, one of the groups raising the red flag saying, hey, how about we actually read this thing and tell you what's in it, ct169strong.org. They've been on the show numerous times here. And because they actually read the bill and explained what was in version one, they incurred the wrath of the powerful in Hartford. So now here's version two. And I guess they're looking over this one as well. How dare people actually read what's in a bill? And Alexis Harrison is back to chat with us. Alexis, it's Paul here. How are you?
Hey, I'm pretty good. How about you?
Good. How dare you people, Alexis, actually analyze what's in a public document? What is wrong with you people? Oh, my.
I know. God. Why would we want to know what happens?
Yeah. So Alexis, is this version two now, and some of the summaries I've read, the governor says, hey, it's more incentive-based now. There's more carrot and less stick. What's in this thing? What do we know?
Yeah, I don't know that. It's kind of deja vu all over again, or a wolf in sheep's clothing. I call it that as well.
Okay.
And this is a 99-page bill that was dumped late Friday. This is just a few days before the special session begins tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
I would say the last bill, 5002, was an F minus. I would give this one an F. At a high level, it brings back the fair share concept that we saw in 5002.
Okay.
Instead of a number coming from this formula that was developed a few years ago through a fair share study, the numbers derived here, the state would set down this arbitrary top-down number to each of the COGs, the council of governments, and then they in turn would distribute those housing quotas to each of the towns. So the COGs essentially do the work. I don't know how that's the town's taking the lead, using the quote from Governor Lamont, because it's just really a takeover of our local control of zoning. Other highlights of the bill, and I do urge people to read it. It's just mind-blowing. It just adds more bureaucracy, more policies that contradict each other. We talked, I think, the last time, Paul, about the parking issues.
Yeah.
So developers don't have to have a maximum parking requirement on their developments, so they could really do whatever they want. Think about the nurse who works, all night and then comes home looking for a spot at 4 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
Where are they going to park? So there are a lot of, they're just not real world, these are not real world concepts that would not work, in my view.
And here's the thing, Alexis, I have had some people come up to me who have kind of heard about this, they hear it ancillarily in the news, and they say, hey, what's up with this low-income housing bill? And I said, no. Is there not a misconception out there that all these units, out of the benevolence of some developers, are going to be these uber-affordable, low-income housing units, when, Alexis, I don't think people understand that this, in many ways, and you and I have talked about this, this is a gift to a lot of deep-pocketed, many out-of-state developers who will say, oh, yeah, I can't wait to build affordable housing as long as I get a certain number of ones that I could sell at market rate or above.
Yeah, I don't think there's hard economics happening when these bills are really created.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, the developers do have to make money. They're not in there for charity reasons.
Sure.
So to have super affordable units, I just don't think is realistic. And I don't think they'll be built because they'll never pencil out. And these projects do have to pencil out.
Yeah.
And the reality is, if you get rid of zoning, I just saw a study recently, I think from the Urban Institute, it's really not going to create as much housing as you think it will. Because there are, other factors that go into affordability or go into construction. It's laws, it's lumber, it's labor, the five L's. So there are a lot of factors that go into building affordable housing, which are not, considered in this bill. So I think it's a state control of our local zoning.
Is it, Alexis, and the guest is Alexis Harrison from ct169strong.org, is it a foregone conclusion that the governor's going to sign this? I mean, there's no way he'd veto this again, would he?
I don't know. I don't think that would. I think this is the political expedient way to get a housing bill through in an election year coming up.
Yeah.
I would say that Governor Lamont has been very smart. You know, he vetoed it last year and probably pacified a lot of moderates.
Yep.
And now he'll pass it this year and pacify the progressives, which he needs that in his voting base. And again, with a special session, I just want to remind your listeners, there are no public hearings. Essentially, the legislators come in, they review the bills, and then they vote it up or they vote it down. And a lot of these concepts in this bill have not seen a public hearing. Some of them have, but I would say not all of them.
Yeah, because as has been explained to us, special sessions are technically for emergency allocations, right? And listen, we all know housing is important, but I think we can both sit here, Alexis, and say, well, wait a minute, there's no real emergency here.
No, nothing is going to drastically change between now and I think it's February 6th when the session gets underway.
No.
You know, we want thoughtful policy, and this, you know, jamming this together in the last few weeks, I don't think is thoughtful policy, and I don't think this would be the end product Governor Lamont would really want. You know, there was a parade at the presser that he held last Friday touting this as bipartisan, a grand compromise. It really isn't, because the Republican minority were not even at the table. I don't know how you call that a compromise.
Yeah, in some backwards universe. All right, folks, the website, CT169Strong. That's CT169Strong.org. Always good to chat with Alexis Harrison.
You too. Thanks, Paul.
Thanks,
bye-bye.
Alexis. Appreciate it. So there you go. A few weeks ago, we told you, and apparently, I don't know what happened with this idea, the state was thinking of investing in the WNBA's Connecticut Sun. I guess that's kind of gone by the wayside. I guess, I don't know. Now, something much more serious here, hospital beds, hospital capacity. And should the state get in the hospital business and bail out some failing hospitals? Now, you may say, well, wait a minute, let them fail, but you do need some bed capacity in the state for, you know, major disasters, plane crashes, God forbid. I mean, things like that. God forbid another pandemic or whatever. So what is the state to do? And one of our neighbors here in New England tried that, and the numbers are in. And here to talk about all that and more on this is Megan Portfolio from the Hartford Portfolio. Check it out, yankeeinstitute.org. Good afternoon, Ms. Portfolio. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm okay. How's the dog? Doggy had a little surgery. Is doggy good?
Oh, he had his gender-affirming care surgery, and he's got the cone on his head, and he's been such a good boy, but it breaks my heart because he struggles, because he wants to go smell the grass and do his business outside.
Yeah.
And it's making it hard, but he's got one more week.
Okay. All right. Good. That's good. All right. Now, hospitals, failing hospitals. So, Megan, outline it, because this is an important story, but it's kind of below the fold here on the papers. You've got UConn, you've got these for-profit companies, and we have, what, a handful of hospitals here that are just failing, but we kind of need the bed capacity, don't we? What's going on here?
Well, you just there's a lot of issues you just brought
up. Yeah.
So what's going on is, and I haven't followed the Waterbury Hospital situation too closely because healthcare is not completely my jam.
Yeah.
But we have a special session coming up, and I'm reading the proclamation that Governor Lamont put out. And all of a sudden, I'm reading it, and, you know, we've got the housing bill, and we've got the slush fund that they want to do. And then there's a couple of paragraphs about allowing UConn to bond money, and we're talking about over $400 million to basically buy this Waterbury Hospital.
Mm-hmm.
So I started to look into it, and the deal is so bad, Yale tried to get involved in this. And, you know, Yale's got a ton of money, and they're in the healthcare business.
Yeah.
They know what they're doing.
Yeah.
They're a great hospital system. They were going to buy it, and they even balked on it. So Connecticut, instead of doing things to make healthcare more affordable, healthcare more available, let's just go buy it. Like, we're going to go buy the Suns. It's complete nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want to do anything that actually prohibits competition in the state. Like, we have very strict certificate of need regulations here, meaning an imaging company or practice, you know, that does MRIs, CAT scans, they can't just say, hey, I want to open up an imaging practice up the street. It's this, you have to go through this rigmarole with the government in order to actually get permission to do it.
Mm-hmm.
You need permission to have hospital beds. We're one of the strictest states in the country for this. So instead of addressing that whole issue that makes it easier for competition, makes it easier for healthcare practices to open up, you know, companies to come in, and whether it's a profit or nonprofit hospital to come into the state, they make it very difficult. So what they're trying to do is UConn Health, which we own and operate, and which typically loses hundreds of million dollars a year. We're always in the red on this. We're never in the black. It's a financial disaster. So the bright idea is let's have one financial disaster by another financial disaster. And I guess they're thinking it's going to like cancel each other out and then be like a positive thing. But this has been tried in Rhode Island.
Yeah. So talk about, because in the column, you talk about Rhode Island did something about this or like this.
Yeah, they didn't actually buy the hospitals. What they did was they just supervised failure.
Yeah.
So there are these, and I actually know people that have worked at these facilities and they were terrible. And so they were struggling, and they were actually bought out by this Prospect
Holdings.
I don't even know the name of it. It's like this big conglomerate. They go, they're not even in the healthcare business. They go in and buy these hospitals.
Yeah.
They're now in Chapter 11. But this Prospect ended up buying these hospitals in Rhode Island. It was a disaster. The state ended up having to bail hundreds of millions of dollars of bailouts just to keep them afloat. They're still failures. Now, Prospect also owns the Waterbury Hospital and a couple others in the state. And it's the same situation. They're in bankruptcy. They're in Chapter 11. And like I said, there was a deal on the table. Yale decided to back out. We're deciding to do this, but this is where I have an issue with it, because it's about process and it's how we get things done in the state. So we have a special session and they're telling us we're going to go bond all this money. There's no public hearing. There's nothing. It just was sprung on us Friday. And now they're going into session tomorrow and Wednesday, and they're going to vote on this. We haven't had a chance to weigh in on it. I have not seen a bill. I haven't seen any transparency or any details on this other than what they've been leaking to the press. There was an actual press conference today in Waterbury. It wasn't even on CTN. I fortunately just found it 2 seconds ago. Someone had filmed it and put it on their Facebook page.
Yeah.
But it wasn't like our state government or UConn putting it on their page. It was, I think it was the town of Waterbury put it on their page.
So
check that out when I'm off of you.
Yeah, as if you don't watch enough CTN. But Megan, have you? Because I haven't seen an actual reason for this. So what is the reason? Are they worried about not having enough beds? Is it saving union jobs? In other words, why is the state? Why might they jump in and do this?
The community does need.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we need healthcare facilities in the state, and there's certain communities that. You know, like in Eastern Connecticut, if you are going into labor, it's not like me in Middletown. I can go up the street and give birth in Middlesex. It's the hospitals aren't close. So the community does need an option for health care.
Yeah.
The state getting involved in this, this just literally, Paul, sprung on us. So there's no details available. It's just like, I don't know. It's like, something shiny. Like, there's the sun, something shiny. Let's buy this. Oh, hospital, something. Let's buy this. But it's a problem when the government makes these huge decisions, because we're going to pay this, you and I.
Well, it's bonded. They're essentially, they're bonding it, which means it's a 30-year payback with interest.
We should be allowed to be involved in this conversation. We are stakeholders in this, and we're not. And it's funny you did mention the unions, because the unions are already talking it up. They're already saying, hey, you know, we're expecting the same benefits. And if someone comes in and buys this and anything changes, we are ready to use our collective power.
Yeah.
So now you're not only buying a failing hospital that you're going to make no money and you're going to have to invest hundreds of millions of dollars, but you may be having a serious like personnel issue.
Yeah.
And an issue with the labor unions. It's a mess. And you can't make a decision to spend $400 to $500 million of taxpayer money behind closed doors without us knowing anything. And I guarantee you most of the lawmakers don't know anything about this.
And then you have
and
to
they're gonna
run
vote
it.
On it.
I mean,
because it's nice, because it is a need.
Yeah.
And we vote with our feelings, and I get it. We do need to have some healthcare things.
Yeah.
Why don't we make it easier for a hospital to function in the state instead of just like throwing money after bad money?
Well, it's the same reason we don't allow, like, you know, in the insurance business, we don't allow association health plans, which a lot of blue and red states do because the big insurance grifters in this state say no, and they have their friends on whatever committee in Hartford, right?
They have very powerful lobbyists. That's what they do.
So not only, Megan, finally, it's not just physically acquiring the hospital, the physical plant, the equipment. The state's got to then run this thing, right?
Oh, yeah, they're going to have to. I mean, I don't know how to answer that because there's not enough information out there.
We don't know.
See a bill. So I can't even, like, I don't even want to guess at it because I don't know, and I don't want to provide
listeners with bogus
information.
I know, you're right. Does it just become an extension, say, of the John Dempsey Hospital, you know, staff there? Or do they pay a third party to come in and run?
I will say this, one thing, and this is what makes me nervous.
Yeah.
Because I don't trust government. I'm like Ron Swanson from that, Parks and Rec show. I just don't trust government. They actually came out and said these will not be state employees.
Oh.
And I'm curious as to why they were getting
ahead of that.
Oh,
That's never going to fly. Are you kidding? Do you know the threats?
They've done it before. How many managers and supervisors were they able to get unionized? They've been after probate employees forever to unionize them. So once CBAC sees this,
are you kidding?
They're going to want...
Are you kidding? Oh, man. Anyway.
Or they're going to want similar benefits. I mean, maybe they won't be part of CBAC, but they're going to look at CBAC and they're going to look at UConn employees. I want that deal.
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny as we wrap up here, I'll give Lamont credit. He has tried. Has he not alluded to folding UConn Health into like more of this? Because it's a separate entity. And I know he said a few years ago, well, wait a minute, if we folded it more into like UConn Med School or the school, it would lose less money. But, you know, that got yelled and screamed at because of, guess what, you know.
The unions.
Yes.
The employees unions.
Yes, yes. All right, Megan Portfolio, check it out, the Hartford Portfolio, this week's column regarding a possible state buy-in to some hospitals here in Connecticut, YankeeInstitute.org. Tell the dog I said hi, okay?
Oh, you're so sweet. Thank you.
Okay, bye. Yeah, we just heard from Chris Murphy there. Some people are saying he should be the next Senate Democratic leader. Hey, it'd give me stuff here for the show, wouldn't it? All right, so what's the deal now? The cloture motion passed, the bill passed, so I guess it's now out of the House, we think. Are they all going to be able to get there in the next couple of days? CBS News reporter Torian Small standing by in D.C. with us. Torian, good afternoon. I guess now the question is, all the House members have to navigate these flight cancellations and get back there, huh?
Yeah, and we've seen some creative ways that lawmakers are looking to make it to the Hill to avoid that. Representative Derek Van Orden of Wisconsin said he'll be riding his motorcycle from Wisconsin to D.C. I mean, this is certainly something that he would love to publicize because he looks much cooler, right?
Yeah.
But, that's one of the reasons why we're seeing lawmakers act so quickly. This reached historic levels of a shutdown causing quite a few headaches for people trying to travel. So we saw in the compromise with Democrats in the Senate and Republicans. Now House Speaker Mike Johnson says the next step here is to force a vote on this in the House floor, and that's set to happen tomorrow.
Torian, are you hearing anything at all? Because usually in these votes, there's always one or two that threaten to hold out or may vote no. You know, they're angry. This is in there or that's not in there. Is this, do you know, are you hearing anything about this being or not being a unanimous Republican vote, or don't we know that?
Well, it certainly wouldn't be a unanimous Republican vote, especially considering the fact that there were a few defectors, especially in Representative Thomas Massey, Libertarian Republican House Freedom Caucus member from Kentucky who voted against it the first time around.
Mm-hmm.
But they being Republicans, have a majority and significant enough to get it across the finish line without all of them. And some Democrats did vote for the clean continue resolution before anyway.
Yeah. And finally, Torian, I got to tell you something. The political flack, at least a big chunk of the Democratic caucus there in the Senate, they are not happy with Chuck Schumer, are they?
Yeah, those members, though, aren't outwardly calling for his resignation. That's night and day compared to progressives in the House who are looking to get Schumer to either step down or step aside when it comes to leadership. Even though Schumer was not a part of the 8 Democrats who joined with Republicans to vote for this continuing resolution, he, in their opinions, didn't do enough to assuage those concerns from those moderates who ended up crossing the line in their minds. To them, they believe that it's unacceptable that he not only capitulated to Republicans in March when it came to a continuing resolution, but he was ineffective in thwarting off this resistance they had. And ultimately, what we saw now is that CR passed the Senate and is headed back to the House now.
All right, Torian Small, CBS News, live in Washington. Torian, thank you. We appreciate it. Take care. Be safe. Thank you.
Thanks.
Appreciate it. There you go.